Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here, and welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So today we turn our focus back to the emerging markets and reflect on performance trends over what has been a very challenging year for many asset classes, the potential impact of the quickly approaching U.S. election, what the year ahead might have in store for the emerging markets, and more. So joining me here on the line for the conversation today, I'm pleased to welcome back Alejo Zarwanko. Alejo is the Chief Investment Officer for Emerging Markets Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. So, Alejo, welcome back to Top of the Morning. Always great to be with you and looking forward to our conversation today.
Dan, thank you for having me over.
Absolutely. So, Alejo, looking forward to diving into it with you. Before we kick off, I do want to point out to our listeners and especially our clients of UBS that the conversation will tie directly into two recent publications. So those publications are the Investing in Emerging Markets Monthly Flagship. The title for the recent edition, Laggards Likely to Regain Their Luster, as well as the CIO Weekly Regional View publication, which you co-authored with Salita Marcelli, a Chief Investment Officer for the Americas. The title of the Weekly Regional View is Blue Wave and Promising Macro Backdrop Not Fully Priced into Emerging Market Assets. So let's dive right into it, Alejo. Maybe you can begin by reviewing economic and asset class performance in the EM space so far in 2020. What are some of the trends that you've picked up on?
Absolutely, Dan. Look, one remarkable characteristic of this year has been the huge dispersion in economic performance across the emerging markets. We're seeing the impact of the coronavirus crisis continue to evolve, but at the same time, a picture of recovery emerging in developing economies. But this recovery is certainly far from uniform. Emerging Asia is leading the pack by a wide margin, ahead of countries in Latin America, emerging Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. Now, these performance differences correlate well with the success the respective governments have had in managing the healthcare crisis, and also, quite importantly, how much stimulus each country has been willing and able to inject into their economies. Now, that's for economic performance. As one might expect, asset class performance has responded in accordance to this disparate economic recovery patterns. And for example, when we look at North Asian equities, right, thinking about China, Korea, Taiwan, emerging market growth stocks, emerging market investment grade bonds, these asset classes have performed very well. And on the other end of the spectrum, for instance, we find Latin American stocks, value equities in emerging markets, and also high yield bonds in the emerging world. What's remarkable, Dan, is that such a marked dispersion in returns has not occurred in recent history. We look back at least 15 years for which we have reliable asset class performance data, and never before have we seen such a marked dispersion. Let me illustrate this with one number. When you look at Asia Pacific equities versus Latin American equities within the emerging market equities world, we see Asia Pacific equities outperforming by almost 70%, right? And so this is quite drastic, and it applies across other segments, as I highlighted earlier.
Alejo, thank you for that performance recap and for highlighting some of the trends that you've picked up on over the past 7, 8, 9 months. Now, pivoting to what's coming up near term, I know the U.S. election, it's hard to believe, though that's only 5 days away from now. Alejo, what do you expect in terms of the impact the U.S. election will or could have on emerging markets? And then maybe more broadly speaking, what are the drivers of emerging markets looking into 2021?
Absolutely. Look, from a practical perspective, what matters for emerging markets is whether we get a unified government outcome or a divided government outcome. This is much more important, we think, than whether Trump or Biden win the election, right? And by, of course, unified government outcome, I mean a presidency and Congress that are under the command of the same political party. Because right now, what is evident to us is that the U.S. needs action, not gridlock, right, to come out of this crisis and pull up the rest of the global economy. An outcome of a unified U.S. government, we think, is more likely to result in faster economic growth, higher inflation and inflation expectations, which is typically supportive of emerging market assets. Of course, there is going to be an impact depending on whether Trump or Biden win, right? Let me start by things in the trade and geopolitical arena that won't change, right? Irrespective of who comes ahead. We do not think that the U.S. will be engaging in an aggressive push for global trade integration. We don't think that we are about to see the signing of fresh major trade agreements, right? What we need to recognize is that America's two political parties are now more aligned on the issue of global trade than is widely appreciated. In recent years, citizens changed their view on the topic of trade. Leaders in the U.S. have grown more skeptical of trade treaties that might jeopardize American jobs and have developed a taste for protecting domestic manufacturing from global competition, right? There's something else that will likely not change, and this is important for emerging markets. Nearly 70% of Americans hold a negative view on China, right? And so we think there's little doubt that tensions between the U.S. and China will continue to exist. Now, there are things that would change depending on whether we get a Biden or a Trump presidency, and that has to do with the tools that are used to exercise trade and geopolitical agenda and the style, right, of each individual. And it needs to be recognized that Biden may be more reluctant to use tariffs as a trade policy tool, and Biden is likely to take a more globalist approach, a more rule-based approach, better visibility this would entail for emerging markets. On top of the election, Dan, this is not the only thing that matters. We'll be over the election either in 5 days or maybe we need more time for final results, but, it won't go beyond 2020, right? So thinking about already in terms of the year ahead, we maintain a positive baseline scenario for the emerging markets macroeconomic backdrop. The first assumption that we make is that at least one vaccine candidate will obtain regulatory approval this year, and that widespread production and distribution of a vaccine is likely throughout the first half of 2021 in the largest economies in the world, emerging markets included. On top of that, monetary and fiscal policies will likely remain very accommodative worldwide. And in this context, we expect an uptrend in commodity prices, not least as the Chinese economy continues to power ahead.
Alejo, in consideration of how the asset class has performed up until this point, and also taking into account some near-term risks, you talked about the elections, some potential impacts there, as well as your longer-term performance outlook for emerging markets into 2021. How should investors think about positioning within emerging markets at this time?
That's right, Dan. Look, in the environment that I just described, right, our emerging market asset class preferences reflect the expectation for emerging economies to continue to recuperate from the virus crisis. More specifically, for economic and asset class performance between leaders and laggards, right? This gap that has emerged that I described a few minutes ago, we expect the gap to shrink. That is, for laggards to catch up to leaders in many areas, right? And so what does this mean for specific emerging market assets? Dollar-denominated sovereign bonds from the emerging world remain our most preferred asset class globally, among others, right? We think there's good carry of close to 5% in dollar terms in this asset class. We expect an additional compression of the spread that the asset class offers above and beyond U.S. Treasuries of, we expect a 50 basis point spread compression in the next 6 months, 6 to 12 months. This compression should come mostly from laggards. We think the high yield end of the rating distribution spectrum. Moving on to equities, emerging market equities, we rate them as neutral in portfolios due to a more balanced risk reward at the asset class level. But we do expect global equities to continue trending upwards despite the volatility that we are experiencing these days linked to second or third waves in a number of countries, but on the back of a medical solution to the pandemic that I described earlier, monetary and fiscal stimulation, we think global equity markets will trend higher towards mid-2021. This applies for emerging market equities as well. And in particular, we would expect an outperformance of regions we have trailed so far this year. So Latin America, emerging Europe, the Middle East, and Africa in a way catching up to emerging Asia as we look into 2021. That is our expectation. And finally, when it comes to currencies, Dan, as you know, we hold a view that the dollar will continue to weaken versus most global currencies into 2021. It's not necessarily in the next couple of weeks. It's hard to give a clear definition of what's going to happen to key currencies in the midst of the electoral race. But looking into 2021, we project dollar weakness. This should translate into stronger emerging market currencies, not necessarily across the board. We do predict strength in Asia Pacific currencies, some catch up or some losses being erased from Latin American currencies in this environment.
Alejo, very helpful and productive conversation. Thank you, as always, for joining us on the Top of the Morning podcast today, reflecting on performance drivers and trends within emerging markets over this past year, talking about potential impacts to the EM space of the upcoming U.S. election, and then ending on guidance when it comes to positioning within emerging markets. So appreciate the insights, as always, Alejo, and look forward to having you back on again with us soon.
Thank you, Dan. It's been my pleasure. And I hope we get an answer soon on, who will be the next U.S. president and what the composition of Congress will be.
Absolutely. Time will tell, and we'll look forward to having some follow-up conversations with you, Alejo. But again, today we've been joined by Alejo Zarwanko, Chief Investment Officer for Emerging Markets Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Before we close out, I do want to highlight to our listeners, and especially our clients of UBS, the two publications that tie right into the conversation I just had with Alejo today. Those are the Investing in Emerging Markets, the monthly flagship publication. Again, the title for the recent edition is Laggards Likely to Regain Their Luster, and then the CIO Weekly Regional View publication, which Alejo co-authored with our Chief Investment Officer for the Americas, Salita Marcelli. The title is Blue Wave and Promising Macro Backdrop Not Fully Priced into Emerging Market Assets. So for UBS clients, do be sure to reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive both of those publications directly, though both publications can now also be located for you up on UBS online services. Top of the Morning will be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.